Welcome everyone. Thank you for coming again to the second night of our Vaishnav Etiquette in Devotee Relationship Seminar. So now we're going to get into a little more into the details of what this Vaishnav Etiquette entails in regard to different types of devotee relationships. And as we've written on the board here, what we're going to focus on for the time being is relationships with those who are senior to us, relationships with those who are equal to us, more or less, and relationships with those who are junior to us. And tonight, we are particularly going to focus on relationships with those who are senior to us. We'll start at the top, so to speak. Relationships with those who are senior to us. Just to set the scene, though, well, I think you've now, have you, got your books, your study guides? Okay, let's just, I believe there are study guides. Now, in my book at least, what we would refer to first of all is on page 19, but I don't know if my 19 is the same as yours. It says, at the top it says, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni explains, this is 19, is it? 19. So now, this is just to set the scene, really, in general. This is a very important verse spoken by Narada Muni to Dhruva Maharaj in the fourth canto. It's fourth canto, chapter 8, verse 34. Every man should act like this. When he meets a person more qualified than himself, he should be very pleased. When he meets someone less qualified than himself, he should be compassionate toward him. And when he meets someone equal to himself, he should make friendship with him. In this way, one is never affected by the threefold miseries of this material world. Now, last night we made an effort to point out how Vaishnav etiquette has quite deep effects on our lives, either positively or negatively, depending. We gave the example of Ramachandra Puri on the negative side. His etiquette was bad. And who was the person on the good side? Ishvara Puri. Yes. So these are two examples. So in other words, this culture of etiquette, behavior, conduct, character, like that, this is not just some sort of peripheral matter of like just social niceties. It's not really a matter like that so much like, you know, when, if you're in England, if you go to meet the Queen, then you're meant to do certain things. You have to bow, if you're a lady, you have to sort of curtsy and address her in a certain way, or in the court. If you have to go to court, then you address the judge as your worship or whatever it is, something like that, although I'm sure he's not worshipable, really. But so these are just social niceties, and they have no real bearing on reality. But Vaishnav etiquette does. So the point is, we're not just trying to treat you or make you become like just well-behaved in a sort of, just train you up like that. But we're trying to do something here which is really going to the heart of our Krishna consciousness. So this is a very important part of it. All of us, as we mentioned, we all have at least one person senior to us, isn't it? Do you have at least one? If you're thinking, boy, I don't know, then you've got a problem. You need to learn some etiquette. And we all have at least one, we have some people who are more or less equal with us, and we may well, probably we have at least one person who's junior to us, or, you know, as time goes on, there'll be more and more people who'll be junior to us. And we gave the basic guideline how to calculate in terms of how long one's been a devotee. It's just a very simple thing. And, you know, it's not like a matter of interpretation or any like major calculation. Whereas if we're going to evaluate in relative terms who's more advanced, how advanced, and not advanced, and how not advanced, and how we fit in, you know, that's a major exercise actually. And particularly if you're not advanced, then you're not going to be very good at it. So this is a simple way, very simple way. How long you've been a devotee, how long you've been initiated. Of course, you know, so many are not initiated, that's okay. Then it's just a matter of how long we've been devotees and how long others have been devotees relative to us. So three basic ways then, Narada Muni says here, three basic ways of relating. People are senior, then, well, he says here, very simple, we should be very pleased when we meet them. You know, if we go into it in a little more depth, then there are two aspects of how we should respond when we meet someone more senior. And one is, we should inquire. And two is, we should be ready, not just ready, but trying to find how to render some service. Don't just wait till they ask you, can you please help? But, you know, come forward. So like this, we should relate with those who are senior. Equals, then it's transcendental friendship. And juniors, he says here, Narada Muni says, compassionate. Now, well, there's a purport here, and you can read the purport. Basically, Prabhupada in the purport is distinguishing between how on the material level we would relate with these types of people and how in spiritual life we should relate with them. If people are senior materially, then we may think how to pull them down. You know, if you're not very high, but you want to appear high, then you'll have to pull others down beneath you. Then you may appear higher, although you may not be. You know, there's that story in the Leelamrita, perhaps you've read, when Prabhupada went to Japan and went to the Dai Nippon printing company for the first printings, mass printings of his books. He was there with Tamal Krishna Goswami negotiating with all these executives. And there was the one young salesman who was the main go-between. But then there were the big decision makers, the big managers and directors who were there, who were really doing the negotiation. So afterwards, Prabhupada asked the man, what is your goal? And all those managers and everyone, including the young salesman, when they left the room, they left their business card. This is a Japanese practice. You must give your business card. It's just good manners. So there was this pile of business cards on the table, and Prabhupada asked the young salesman, what's your goal? The young salesman said nothing, but he pulled his card out from the bottom of the little pile and put it on the top and looked at Prabhupada. Yes. So a picture can say 1,000 words. Right. So, people who are superior to us, on the material level, we might want to knock them down so we can step in. others who are equal to us, then we want to somehow outshine them, show them up. And people who are junior to us, we may want to exploit them. This is often the case, you know. You just started working, you're just a young person, just started working. Suddenly everyone wants you to bring them tea. And things like this. But in Krishna consciousness it's different, as we said. And Narada Muni makes a very important point at the end of the translation there. In this way, one is never affected by the threefold miseries of this material world. You know, in other words, this makes a difference. It's not just a matter of being well-behaved and pleasant, but if we learn how to deal with different types of people appropriately, then we will elicit suitable, favorable responses from them. And when we do that, then we become happy. But if we are relating with the senior people, you know, I was, my first job, would you believe I worked? I was a cadet reporter. That's what they called us, on a newspaper in New Zealand. And the big boss, the really big boss, was Mr. Upton. And one day, he called the news desk. That was where all us little junior reporters were. He called the news desk. He said, "Hello, this is Upton here." And whoever it was who answered the phone said, "Yes, Upton." And Mr. Upton didn't appreciate. So, you know, if you deal wrongly, then you won't be happy. But if you deal nicely, appropriately, you'll get appropriate responses. Your relationships will be nice, harmonious, in natural ways. And as Narada Muni says, you won't be affected by the threefold miseries of this material world. It makes a big difference. And that's just in a very obvious way, but even in more subtle ways, it makes differences in all sorts of subtle ways, you know. Like if you tell the boss, "Yes, Upton," but your junior, you know, or somebody totally unqualified, you're listening to him like it's the gospel truth and doing what he says. And this is all a recipe for misery, actually. So it makes a difference in many ways. Now, another interesting quote, which is not in the book, but it's a really beautiful one from Prahlad, or it's about Prahlad. This is now from the 7th canto, chapter 4, verse 31 and 32, I think. Let's see. "He was completely cultured as a qualified Brahmin, having very good character and being determined to understand the absolute truth. He had full control of his senses and mind. Like the super soul, he was kind to every living entity and was the best friend of everyone." So this is in a broad sense, everyone. This was the general mood to everyone. "To respectable persons, he acted exactly like a menial servant. To the poor, he was like a father. To his equals, he was attached like a sympathetic brother. And he considered his teachers, spiritual masters, and older godbrothers to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was completely free from unnatural pride that might have arisen from his good education, riches, beauty, aristocracy, and so on." So, there again, some ideas how to deal, ideal ways of dealing with different categories of people. So now, who are our seniors then? Let's write on the board. like some suggestions from you. Who are our seniors? Main seniors? Any suggestions? Nobody. Who are our seniors? Mother Nanjanani. Okay, our temple president. Let's just call him the TP for the time being. Namacharya. Yes. The guru. Another type of senior. Nobody else. Yes? Nandu?
Anyone older than us?
Yeah. Of course, that's more in a material sense. Someone from this side? Another type of senior. Yes?
Someone who's doing preaching.
Doing preaching. Okay. I mean, that's possible. Maybe I can give you a couple of hints. Well, unless anyone's got any further suggestions. Namacharya. Oh. Oh, yes. That's right. Okay. Anyone else got any other ideas? Okay, well we can put that down under temple president, etc., the administrative authority. No, Namacharya, you are really bright tonight. Okay. Well, yeah, because they're previous though. Yeah? Yeah. Okay. I'm thinking of also some particular types like your senior god brothers and god sisters. Yeah. That's like a group, a broad group. Senior god brothers and god sisters, and just senior devotees. I mean, I guess you could put that under those who initiated before you. How about this? What do you think of this one? Just brace yourself, everyone. What do you think of this one? Well, what about your parents? Are they senior to you? Of course, again, it's material, so it's not... I mean, it's there in our Vaishnava culture, so it is something we should talk about. How about, are you ready? The husband for the wife. I knew you'd react like that. We have just transcended Vedic culture. Well, look, you know, ladies, I mean, are you aware that strictly speaking, according to Vedic culture, the husband is a superior? Are you aware of that? I'm not asking for your opinion, but you're aware of the fact. And even, you know, although perhaps it's not always the case, but it's, I think, more often the case than not, much more often, the husband is older, isn't it? It just sort of, you know, like that. Yeah. So, do you mind if I put that up, ladies? Is that okay? Yeah. I think it'll keep you awake when we get to that part of the discussion, because it, you know, there are some very interesting statements and very emphatic statements, actually, would you believe, in scripture on this particular subject. Okay, well, there we've got a few. And I propose, I think of all of them. Well, you know, Prabhupada, of course, the previous acharyas, the thing is that they are not present and we're not dealing with them. Of course, you know, we have to worship Prabhupada, but we're talking here more about practical relationships on an ongoing basis, like day-to-day type of basis. So I would say that of the seniors, the groups that we've written up there, I think that putting aside Prabhupada and the previous acharyas who are just in a, like a super category, I think the most important here is the spiritual master. Is that okay? But I'd like to also include not just the spiritual master, but the spiritual master's contemporaries. Yeah. They're also meant to be respected like the spiritual master. So let's just have a look at this then, to start off with. Well, you know, a very nice approach. A very nice approach is offering obeisances. Actually, in devotee relationships generally, I think here in South Africa we don't have so much of an awareness of this fact, but in other parts of the world where I've been, I remember in England when I joined, it was just like everyone offered obeisances to everyone else, a lot. Bowing down. Prabhupada says, let's see, this is from 1st Canto, chapter 19, verse 11, purport. The system of bowing the head to the ground to show respect to superiors is an excellent etiquette which obliges the honored person deep into the heart. Even the first grade offender is excused simply by this process. And therefore Maharaj Parikshit, this is from when he was just about to leave this world, he offered his obeisances to all the sages assembled by the Ganges. So now, with seniors, it's always good to offer obeisances. Actually, the standard etiquette, you know what the standard etiquette is? That when you see your spiritual master in person, you should offer your obeisances. Anytime. Means, you know, if he goes around the corner and comes back 5 minutes later, you should offer your obeisances. If he then goes away again and comes back after a little while, you should offer your obeisances. As Prabhupada says here, this is excellent etiquette, which obliges the person receiving the obeisances and goes deep into the heart. With sannyasis in general, Prabhupada instructed the devotees that the first time you see a sannyasi in the day, you should offer obeisances. For your own spiritual master, any time that you may see him, on many different occasions during one day. But every time you offer obeisances. But a sannyasi the first time. Otherwise, you know what Prabhupada said? You should fast for the day. Yeah. Otherwise you should fast for that day if you don't do that. And then your godbrothers, godsisters, and the devotees in general, then it's nice to offer obeisances. You know, in South Africa, there's a culture I've seen of when we meet people or people call us on the phone and we answer the phone, what do we say? What do we say? You tell me. No. How are you? This is very South African. How are you? How are you? So that's okay. But there's one place, it's in the 11th canto, I was just reading today, and King Nimi meets the 9 Yogendras, and he does not ask them, how are you? In fact, Prabhupada says, let's see if I can find it, I may not be able to find it, but Prabhupada makes the point that these great personalities, the great personalities, I mean, great spiritually more advanced personalities, they are capable of bestowing well-being. So why ask them how they are? You know Bhakti Vallabh Puri Maharaj? He has a standard answer when people ask him, how are you? This standard question. You know what the standard answer is? Terrible. Anyway, we don't want to get on anybody's case too much. But, yeah, the great personalities, the advanced devotees, they're capable of bestowing well-being. So what's the point of asking them how they are? Now, the spiritual master then, and his contemporaries. Here's a nice quote from Prabhupada. Let's see. So the king worshipped the nine sages according to the standard Vaishnava etiquette. The etiquette for worshipping exalted Vaishnavas is expressed by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur with the words, what are the words? From one of his songs, which we sing at Mangalarti, if we happen to be at Mangalarti. Sakshad Hari Tvena Samasta Shastra. An exalted Vaishnava, being totally surrendered to the will of the Supreme Lord, is taken to be a transcendental, a transparent medium for the Lord's will. In Chaitanya Charitamrita is stated that even by a moment's association with the pure devotees of the Lord, one can achieve all perfection in life. So now we're talking about the spiritual master and the contemporaries. How in general, just a general perspective on them, how we should generally see them, and then from that the way we deal with them will unfold. But the basic way in general that we would see them is Sakshad Hari Tvena Samasta Shastray, as transparent mediums for the will of the Lord. In other words, of course, what are we meant to do? We're meant to ask them some question, and not so much, how are you? Although, you know, it's okay, we don't want anyone to get paranoid about this. We're meant to ask some question. Yeah. And then we will get some answer. And what do we do with the answer when we get it? Do we just say thank you and shelve it somewhere and forget about it, in other words? No. We should take it that this is someone very close to the Lord. And if they say something to us, then it's sort of like the Lord is expressing himself to us. So this is a general perspective on the spiritual master particularly, and his contemporaries also. We should take them as being special representatives of the Lord, and what they say to us, we should take as important instruction for our lives. This is the general orientation we should have when dealing with these types of people. Now, in more specific terms, for the spiritual master, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says in his purport to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 41. Now, who's sitting here? Please put your hand up if you happen to know what is Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 41. Don't be shy, please. You know, don't you? Via Versailles at Macau. Something, something. Via Versailles at Budhir. Eke ha kurinandana. Bahu shakakyanantascha. Budayo via Versailles. So via Versailles at Macau. That those who are on this path of devotional service, they are at one point, their minds are fixed on Krishna. They're one point in their determination. Their aim is one, Krishna. Whereas the intelligence of those who are irresolute, who are not determined to advance in Krishna consciousness, is bahu shaka, many branched, many interests all over the place. So there's no real focus, and there's no real, like, that focus is sharp, and it cuts through the material energy. In this way, the devotee advances. So, this is the verse then, 241, spoken by Krishna, that those who are on this path are resolute in determination, and their aim is one. In this way, they make good progress, cutting through material nature, moving forward in their Krishna consciousness. So in his purport to this verse, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gives the understanding of what this means, how you would actually do it, what that consciousness consists of. This is very important. Try and listen to this. The best kind of intelligence I can have is intelligence used in the service of Krishna. Intelligence is defined as fixed when it is intent upon my spiritual master's instructions, such as chanting the name of Krishna, remembering his activities, and performing service to his lotus feet. My spiritual master's instructions are my sadhana and my life, both in the beginning stages of bhakti as well as in bhakti's perfectional stage. I desire only to follow his instructions. I accept nothing else as my life's work, even in dreams. Whether I am happy or distressed, whether the material world remains or is destroyed, I do not care. There is no loss for me. I simply must carry out the orders of my spiritual master. Fixedness upon his orders is determined intelligence and devotional service. And only by being fixed on his orders can such determined intelligence prosper. Prabhupada said that when he read that purport as a young man, just fairly newly married like that, when he read that purport and its great focus and emphasis on following the instructions of the spiritual master and making the instructions of the spiritual master one's life and soul, regardless of what may be going on around you in the material world, Prabhupada said when he read that, it struck him very deeply, and it was a turning point in his life. Yeah. So, again, the basic, you know, the overall perspective on the spiritual master and his contemporaries is they're representatives of Krishna. Krishna is addressing us through them. But particularly the spiritual, one's own individual spiritual master. Like, the question can arise, and sometimes it does, that, you know, for example, we're hearing many classes when you're at, those of you who are at Rath Yatra, going around from one question and answer tent to the other and hearing. So sometimes, you know, it may be sometimes that one spiritual master, or say just one senior devotee, because we're talking about the contemporaries also. So one senior devotee may, in terms of some detailed understanding of what to do in a particular situation, some like a finer detail. He may have one opinion of how to deal with the situation, and your spiritual master may have another opinion. This is addressed actually in Nectar of Devotion. Prabhupada talks about this specifically, that there are general orders, then there are specific orders, detailed instructions. A general instruction for us is you chant 16 rounds a day. It is not that one spiritual master in ISKCON will say chant 16 rounds, another will say no, chant 15, and another will say no, chant 20. But everyone will say chant 16 rounds, minimum at least. This is general. But, you know, how to address a particular situation, like there you are, you're trying to distribute books, all the people are just rushing past you and won't take a book, so you start asking around, what do you do? So someone may say, just walk straight in front of them and stick the book in their stomach. Bang. That'll wake them up. Another may say, you know, jump up and down and wave your arms. Another may say, you know, we had one devotee who devised in England a remarkable way of stopping people. Excuse me, do you speak English? Everyone stopped. Just about everyone. Because they thought he was some lost tourist or something like that. So there was another devotee in France many years ago. He won the marathon. And everyone was asking him. He was winning every day. The scores were coming in. Everyone was asking him, how do you do it? And he said, I've got a special mantra, something I say. But he wouldn't tell anyone. Finally, after the marathon, when he'd won, he said, all right, I'll tell everyone. What I do, I jump out in the people in front of the people and I say, Hari Bol! You know, another one, sometimes, yeah, I mean, you get all sorts of characters. He would, with his hand in his, like, jacket pocket, he would walk up to the people and say, you know what I have in here? That got people's attention. So my point is, in terms of detailed instruction, someone, different spiritual masters even, and actually we're talking about including the contemporaries, so maybe a fair range of people, they may have different ideas. So then the question arises, it's one of those what-if questions. What if all these people who are meant to be transparent via mediums to Krishna, who Krishna's speaking to, what if they're all giving you different instructions? Does that mean Krishna has become sort of schizophrenic? Or just, you know, Krishna's bewildered, he doesn't know what the right instruction is. No, they may all, in many, many cases, they will all be good ways of dealing with the situation. Because practically any situation, you'll find there are a number of possible ways of dealing with it. But we find we're in this situation receiving different instructions from a number of very senior people, you know, who are essentially on the same level as our spiritual master or thereabouts. So what do we do? We accept the order of our spiritual master. And the others, you know, we may thank them very, you know, appreciatively and sincerely. But actually we then follow the instruction of the spiritual master. So the spiritual master's instruction, in terms of etiquette, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says they should be like the active principle in the devotee's life. Active principle means the thing which when you put it in, it makes everything work. Like that. You put petrol in a car, you put a type of catalyst in some resin or something like that, then everything comes together. The order of the spiritual master is like that. So we should be in our relationship with the spiritual master as arguably the most important senior in our life. We should really take his instructions very seriously. The question sometimes arises, what if you can't follow the instruction right now somehow? You just don't feel up to it or can't get it together. Well, keep it within your heart. Prabhupada was instructed on the first day that he met his spiritual master, you go to the West and preach in English. Prabhupada had recently got married, and, you know, it was just like, in a certain sense, impractical. He couldn't just dump his new family like that. But he kept it within his heart. And then later he executed that instruction. So this is very important in our relationship with our spiritual master. The instructions are not, you know, like optional. They're not optional. They're the very cornerstones and foundation stones of our existence. So, yes, like this. So there are a few considerations. Yesterday, we mentioned one. Now, we mentioned that the spiritual master, he has a duty to his disciples to chastise them and train them. Doesn't mean he's just sort of, you know, got to be angry all the time. Otherwise, he's not doing his job properly. But sometimes he may give some chastisement. And yesterday we gave some examples of that from Prabhupada. And the point there, in terms of etiquette, our behavior, is that we should really, when we get chastised, not if we get, but when we get chastised for something, then we should not get into that, you know, defensive frame of mind in which we are now arguing within ourselves that, you know, it wasn't that bad. Why did he have to do it in front of everyone? You know, I meant well. Why didn't he recognize that? All these different types of little ideas that may pop up. We should take it as mercy. Something to help us. In fact, the more we can do that in relation to the spiritual master, the better it'll be for us. You know, there's the song that we sing every day at Guru Puja. Sri Guru Charanapadma Kevala Bhakati Sadma Bando Mui Savadan Mate. So that verse says that the lotus feet of the spiritual master are the only way, kevala, the only way by which we can attain pure devotional service. Therefore I bow down at his lotus feet with great awe and reverence. The word which is used in the Bengali is savadan. Savadan. You know, if you know Hindi well enough, or maybe Gujarati, you'd know what that word means. You know what that word means? Means caution, beware, be careful. It's a warning. Even when you go to India, if you can read Hindi, if you're driving in North India and you come to some roadworks, you'll see a sign. In Hindi it will say, Savadan, beware, warning, watch out for what's coming. So this is... Narottam Das Thakur is warning us that in our spiritual lives, we should understand so much is dependent on the relationship with the spiritual master. And keeping the relationship with the spiritual master the way it should be, by not going off on our own little tangents in different ways, becoming resentful if we're chastised, or becoming resentful if we're not given recognition, things like this. You know the story when Prabhupada wanted the devotees to finish Chaitanya Charitamrita. You heard about that? They were doing one book every 2 months. And they had fallen behind Prabhupada. Prabhupada was translating and commenting. They had fallen behind Prabhupada. So Prabhupada called them all together in Los Angeles, which is where the BBT is, and said, you know, you've got to do more. So they had a meeting, and they came back, and the devotee in charge at that time, Radha Vallabha, said, Prabhupada, we have decided we are going to really get into it. We are going to really do more. We are going to do one book every 1 month. We're going to double it. Prabhupada just dismissed this as rubbish. And Prabhupada said, I want all the 17 books in 2 months. And Radha Vallabha said, but Prabhupada, that's impossible. And Prabhupada gave his famous reply, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. Of course, Radha Vallabha didn't think quickly enough to reply, but Prabhupada, I'm a fool. So they did it. They actually did it in 2 months. 17 books. And the devotee took, actually it was 18 books in fact, including one volume from the 5th canto Bhagavatam and 17 Chaitanya Charitamrita. The devotee flew all the way from Los Angeles to Vrindavan to present the books to Prabhupada on his Vyasa Puja day, which was 2 months. But he was one day late. So in he came with the books and said, Prabhupada, you know, like, wow, we did it. Prabhupada said, you are one day late. You know, and what they went through, what they went through to do that, my Lord. You know, the manuscripts, the manuscripts that they are editing and correcting by hand with pen, they had all these streaks of blue ink, or red ink, whatever, across the page. Across the page that way, right across the whole page. Why? Because they were falling asleep as they were doing it. So what they went through was just incredible. And Prabhupada, what did he say at the end? You're one day late. So, you know, some people would say, this is good reason to just get into a bit of a huff. You know, do you know what we did to achieve this? Wow. But no. This is the etiquette. And it's not just, you know, a matter of being a nice boy or a nice girl, you know, well-mannered. But this is very important in our Krishna consciousness. The more we can adjust ourselves like that, to accept it like that, then it'll purify our heart, we'll advance in Krishna consciousness. So again, this Vaishnava etiquette, in so many ways, it's not just a matter of being nice. You know, like, I don't know if you ever saw the Julie Andrews film, My Sweet Lady. Did you ever see that? I didn't see it either, but but it was, you know, it was a big movie at that time. My Sweet Lady was all about how they took one Cockney lady, young girl, from the back streets of the East End of London, and, you know, like really low class, really low class, and they've got this horrible accent, and they're just really gross people. So they trained her up to be my sweet lady, trained her to speak English with a lovely accent, West London accent, and she became my sweet lady. So my fair lady. So this Vaishnav etiquette, though, is not just a matter of becoming well-mannered, but we're talking about things which do make a difference in our lives. And here, because the spiritual master really is the most important person, at least living person, in our life, you know, living in just ordinary terms, then these etiquettes are really very, very important. So this is one to keep in mind. Yeah. So you don't use the sitting place or eating place of the spiritual master. You don't wear his clothes. Although after he passes away, you may. And Prabhupada went to Nairobi and someone did his washing and put the laundry on the line. And later in the day, the devotee went to get the laundry. It was gone. And Prabhupada was sort of struggling to get together some clothes to wear the next day. The next day, they looked around. They saw the brahmacharis were wearing Prabhupada's clothes. So we don't do things like that. You know, the eating utensils, clothes, shoes of the spiritual master, we don't use them. They are to be considered sacred. Yeah. We don't try to instruct the spiritual master. We don't do that. Yeah. We should understand. Yeah, we should. This is from Prabhupada. We are all in need of instruction and correction by the spiritual master. Not being afraid of the spiritual master's correction will make us reckless. You know, we don't want to become reckless, foolhardy in our Krishna consciousness. So we should always, you know, have real, take the instructions with real gravity, like that. We should understand that our service is going through the spiritual master. We're being connected. Just like electricity. You receive electricity. It's running through a line, and you can connect many pieces of wire together, and at the end, if you touch, there'll be electricity there. So like this, Krishna's mercy is coming down to us through the disciplic succession, and our service is going up to Krishna through the disciplic succession. Yeah. Two-way arrangement. Not that our devotional service is going from us to Krishna. Here, Krishna, take this. Not really. You know, we understand, for example, when you offer arati or you offer food, that Krishna only accepts something if it's offered in love. He says that in Bhagavad Gita. If you offer me with love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit or water, I'll accept it. But we may not have so much love and devotion when we offer our food, isn't it? We may be thinking, what do I like? What do I want to eat? And then we cook that. And then we offer it to Krishna. But it's just, the whole program is, what am I going to eat? That's actually the program. And the offering process, it may end up being more of a formality, just to sort of, you know, just as a formality, technically, to make it correct. Yeah. So, you know, we're not in so much of a position, we don't have so much love and devotion. So how will Krishna accept? Well, if we offer it to the spiritual master who has taken a vow to help us, and is watching and willing to bend and do the needful to help like that, then he can offer it to his spiritual master, who offers it to his. And this way it goes through the disciplic succession, and it is accepted by Krishna. So in this way we should understand that all of our service, not just offering food, it's not like, who's the spiritual master? Well, he's the person who I have to offer food to when I'm hungry. He's an aid to overcoming my hunger, in other words, in Krishna consciousness. But actually it's all coming down to me through, and it's all going up to Krishna through. This is the system. This is the system. And this we'll find, you could say, practically in countless places. Yeah, so these etiquettes are really very important. And it applies also to the contemporaries of the spiritual master. Just like Lord Chaitanya, he would offer respect to Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya was older. We've made a note here that older people should be offered some respect. So Advaita Acharya was a generation older, but he was also a godbrother of Ishvara Puri. He was also a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. So Lord Chaitanya would offer him respect. But Advaita Acharya knew that he was subordinate to Lord Chaitanya, because he is Shiradakshay, he's Vishnu, and Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, and Vishnu is coming from Krishna and is subordinate to Krishna. So Advaita Acharya did not like this, that Lord Chaitanya would bow down and offer him respect, and he would ask him not to. But Lord Chaitanya just insisted on doing this. So Advaita Acharya, he decided, he adopted a very clever strategy. You know about this? The strategy of Advaita Acharya? He decided that I have to be accepted by Lord Chaitanya as an inferior. And to be accepted as an inferior, what is the clearest manifestation of that? Is if you get chastised. If someone chastises you, it means they're taking you as an inferior. They're taking the senior position. So he made up his mind, I've got to do something which Lord Chaitanya will chastise me for. So you know what he did? He was so desperate about this, he decided to preach Mayavad, that it's all one. We're all God, everyone is God. And who needs Krishna? Because I'm God, I don't need Krishna, I've got me. Like this, he was preaching this. Lord Chaitanya heard that and he thought, no, it's just a rumor. But then he heard again and again, and he realized this is going on. So he went to see Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya came out, running out and said, have you heard the good news? It's all one. We're all God. And he pointed to Lord Chaitanya and said, you're God. I'm God. Actually, it's true. But in other cases, it was not true. But he was just doing this deliberately to anger Lord Chaitanya. So he just kept on and on. Lord Chaitanya said, now come on, Lord, please, will you stop this nonsense? And Advaita Acharya said, but what nonsense? This is great. I've realized that it's all one. Nothing matters. You can do anything because it's all one. Doesn't make any difference. So Lord Chaitanya became so angry, he attacked Advaita Acharya and started beating him up. And threw him on the ground and jumped on top and was hitting him and shaking him. And Advaita Acharya's wife was pleading with Lord Nityananda, who was there, stop him! Stop him! My husband's an old man. He may die. And at Vajracharya this was going on. He was just calling out, Haribo! This is great! It's all one, yes! Until they pulled Lord Chaitanya off. And then Advaitracharya offered his dandavats and said, thank you so much for accepting me as your junior. I appreciate it so much. Don't do that, okay? But, you know, it's very relishable. It's so relishable, actually. In fact, it's really the most relishable thing to be properly situated at the lotus feet of the spiritual master as the humble, humble, humble servant. Gopi Bhartu Padakamayo Dasadas Anudas. Lord Chaitanya said, Dasadas Anudas. That Anu means little, atomic. You're the servant of the servant. They're like real servants, but you're the atomic-sized servant. Anudas. Tiny servant. This is the nicest thing in Krishna consciousness. Okay, there's some thoughts there on etiquette with the spiritual master. Did any of you write any questions down yet, or... Let's see. Yeah, senior God brothers and God sisters. You know, there's one letter of Prabhupada's, and actually I was trying to find it, I couldn't find it today, in which Prabhupada says that they can be seen as, should be seen as representatives of the spiritual master. There can even be a type of oneness like that. Of course, you know, we use this word Prabhu. Prabhu means master. It is not just like, you know, our slang for when you want to address someone but not use their name, if you know what I mean. In South Africa, I noticed when I first came here, although it's not so prominent now, was the use of the term, it's a hippie term. And I was really surprised when I noticed it, this term, man. Amongst the Indians. I was really quite surprised. Of course, this was in Chatsworth, so it may be a little different. But when I heard one lady speaking to another lady, devotee, hey man, so I thought, wait a minute. So the term, this term Prabhu is not just our slang, you know, equivalent. Hey Prabhu. Could be, hey man, or, how are you guys? How are you, Prabhus? It's not just a slang term. And particularly, you know, if you're angry with someone, you say, oh, you, what are you doing, Prabhu? And I was, you know, you're a silly fool, really. But I'm just using this term, Prabhu, because it's the term we use. No, it means master. So, particularly those... Now, we're not talking here about the spiritual master and the contemporaries. We're now talking about your immediate seniors, your godbrothers, godsisters, and other senior devotees who are of your spiritual generation, but senior to you. So, Prabhu, we have to accept them as master, and really, when we say that, we should be conscious of what it implies, what it means. And deal with them like that. Then parents, well, the temple president, that was the first one suggested. You know what Prabhupada said? There's one letter. Prabhupada said that if the temple president tells you, if the temple president gives you some service, all right, we want you to do this. Then Prabhupada said, you should take it that Krishna himself personally wants you to do that. Not, as happens in some cases, where the temple president, you just happen to be sort of, so to speak, in the wrong place at the wrong time, and the temple president just grabs you because you are just the nearest one around and asks you, can you wash the pots? And then you think, oh no, it's my unlucky day. But we should know that this is coming from Krishna. And, you know, I can say back in the old days, the good old days or whatever they were in the 70s, this sort of idea was very much in the devotees' minds, that the GBCs and the temple presidents, they were Prabhupada's representatives, and we did what they said. And we really did what they said. Yeah. So, therefore, the basic etiquette then with the temple president, I see Subal slipped out, but the basic etiquette is one of cooperation and respect as the representative of the spiritual master. Now, of course, you know, you cannot, it's not that he is necessarily exactly like that. If, I mean, in the sense that he may make some mistakes. So if it appears it's like that, that there's some error there, or, you know, then you can always appeal it. That's there. He's more likely to make mistakes, generally, than the spiritual master. But it's a basic rule of thumb, we should take it like that. And this will be very good for us. You know, otherwise you get, this one will not do it for that reason, the other one will not do it for this reason, someone else will not do it for another reason, and things become very difficult, actually. Our principle in Krishna consciousness, this process is a descending process. It comes down from up, and it comes down to us. So things that come down to us, generally we should accept. This is our etiquette, in general, in this sense. Right. Now, parents, you know, without getting into too much, because, you know, your parents are probably or may not be devotees, but interesting point, that when the very, very first devotees went to see their parents the first time after becoming devotees, in fact, the first one was Brahmananda. He had become a devotee, shaved his head, moved into the temple, wearing dhoti and kurta. He had not been to visit his parents yet. His parents didn't even know. But then one day after some time, his mother sort of caught up with him by telephone and said, you know, where are you? Come and see me. So he asked Prabhupada, what should I do? Prabhupada said, as soon as you see her, you should offer obeisances. So he went. She didn't even know. I mean, it's one thing, you know, generally now, the parents, at least they know what is Hare Krishna, or at least what Hare Krishna looks like. But in those days, they didn't even know what is it. They didn't even know what Hare Krishna looked like. And then suddenly her son appears on the doorstep with a dhoti and kurta on, a shaved head, sikha, and tilak. And his mother opened the door and was just, you know, dumbfounded, just stunned. Then he offered his obeisances, and she just snapped. And she just closed the door on him and wouldn't open it. Anyway, that's a fact, a historical incident. But, you know, in principle, we should be very respectful to our parents and, you know, nice, cooperative like that. Now, of course, the what if is, what if they don't want us to be devotees? Or they want us to sort of compromise our Krishna consciousness for them? Well, that's another thing. That we're going to come to shortly. But the general The general thing is not, as was fairly common back in those old days, that, you know, my mother and father, I have no mother and father. Krishna's my father. They, my so-called mother and father, they're just nobody, the same as anyone else in the street. So that type of attitude, because I don't think, you know, most of you are from Indian backgrounds, and I don't think, you know, your devotees, I don't think you have that sort of attitude to your parents anyway. But we should be nice to our parents and try and help them. Because materially they are seniors, but spiritually what may they be? They may be our juniors. And how do you deal with juniors? You're very kind. You try to help them spiritually. So in appropriate ways, not condescending ways, but appropriate ways, we would try to be nice and helpful to our parents in their Krishna consciousness. Now, what about householders? Is this too touchy a subject for you ladies? Or are you men going to get too sort of, you know, puffed up? But actually the fact is that traditionally the husband is taken to be the senior, the head of the family. And actually a spiritual master for the wife, you know, if he's qualified, of course, he's meant to be, put it that way. In this way, you know, Prabhupada, there's one interesting letter of Prabhupada's where one lady, married lady, has written to him and sort of saying, you know, my husband, he's trying to give me instructions in Krishna consciousness, but, I mean, he's okay, he's chanting his rounds, but he's not exactly spiritual master material. So, you know, do I really have to do what he says? And Prabhupada wrote back and said that this is Krishna's mercy on you, that you have two spiritual masters, not just one. And one of them's living with you all the time. So you have an even greater opportunity to become humble. Yeah. Anyway, I hope none of you ladies are sitting there thinking, So let's read a few verses from the Bhagavatam. How's that? You know, you can't argue with the Bhagavatam, at least you shouldn't try. How's this? Listen to this. Mother Sita was very submissive, faithful, shy, and chaste, always understanding the attitude of her husband. Thus, by her character and her love and service, she completely attracted the mind of the Lord. Prabhupada's purport. As Lord Ramachandra is the ideal husband, we'll talk about husbands sooner or later, Mother Sita is the ideal wife. Such a combination makes family life very happy. If the kings, leaders, Brahmins, teachers would set forth the examples we receive from Vedic literature like this, Mother Sita, the entire world would be heaven. Indeed, there would no longer be hellish conditions within this material world. See how you can handle this one, ladies. Got your seatbelts fastened? Chayavana Muni was very irritable, but since Sukanya had gotten him as her husband, she dealt with him carefully according to his mood. Knowing his mind, she performed service to him without being bewildered. Purport. This is an indication of the relationship between husband and wife. A great personality like Chayavana Muni has the temperament of always wanting to be in a superior position. Such a person cannot submit to anyone. Therefore, Chayavana Muni had an irritable temperament. His wife, Sukanya, could understand his attitude. And under the circumstances, she treated him accordingly. If any wife wants to be happy with her husband, she must try to understand her husband's temperament and please him. This is victory for a woman. Even in the dealings of Lord Krishna with his different queens, it has been seen that although the queens were the daughters of great kings, they placed themselves before Lord Krishna as his maidservants. However great a woman may be, she must place herself before her husband in this way. That is to say, she must be ready to carry out her husband's orders and please him in all circumstances. Then her life will be successful. So, what do you think of that? Anyway, this is Srimad Bhagavatam, this is Prabhupada. And this is important, actually. Of course, you know, what goes without saying is that the husband also has to be up to the standard. You can't just sit back and say that, you know, it's my right. Westerners contend that this is a slave mentality for the wife, but factually it is not. It is the tactic by which a woman can conquer the heart of her husband, however irritable or cruel he may be. But I don't think any of you, your husbands, are really that irritable, are they? Or cruel? I hope not. I mean, if they are, then there's something you can do, actually, which we'll get to. Right. This is now from the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, in which there is a specific description, there are specific descriptions of the duties of the different orders. To render service to the husband, to be always favorably disposed toward the husband, to be equally well disposed towards the husband's relatives and friends, and to follow the vows of the husband. These are the four principles to be followed by women, described as chaste. A chaste woman must dress nicely and decorate herself with golden ornaments for the pleasure of her husband. That means he's got to give her golden ornaments. Always wearing clean and attractive garments, she should sweep and clean the household with water and other liquids, so that the entire house is always pure and clean. She should collect the household paraphernalia and keep the house always aromatic with incense and flowers, and must be ready to execute the desires of her husband, being modest and truthful, controlling her senses, and speaking in sweet words. A chaste woman should engage in the service of her husband with love, according to time and circumstances. A chaste woman should not be greedy, but satisfied in all circumstances. She must be very expert in handling household affairs, and should be fully conversant with religious principles. She should speak pleasingly and truthfully, and should be very careful and always clean and pure. Thus, a chaste woman should engage with affection in the service of a husband who is not fallen. The woman who engages in the service of a husband, following strictly in the footsteps of the goddess of fortune, surely returns home back to Godhead with her devotee husband and lives very happily in the Vaikuntha planets. Yes, now, to get to the what if side of things. What if the husband is sort of, you know, not up to so much? Or like even here, there was a statement, engage in the service of the husband who is not fallen. What if he is fallen? You know, actually degraded. So in the purport there, Prabhupada says, it is recommended therefore that a chaste wife not associate with a fallen husband. A fallen husband is one who's addicted to the four principles of sinful activity: illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication. Thus, a chaste woman is advised not to agree to serve such a husband. It is not that a chaste woman should be like a slave, while her husband is Naradama, the lowest of men. Although the duties of a woman are different from those of a man, a chaste woman is not meant to serve a fallen husband. If her husband is fallen, it is recommended that she give up his association. Giving up the association of a husband does not mean, however, that a woman should marry again and thus indulge in prostitution. If a chaste woman unfortunately marries a husband who's fallen, she should live separately from him. Similarly, a husband can separate himself from a woman who is not chaste, according to the description of Shastra. The conclusion is that the husband should be a pure Vaishnava, and that a woman should be a chaste wife, with all the symptoms described in this regard. Then both of them will be happy and make spiritual progress in Krishna consciousness. Okay. Now, isn't that food for thought? Anyone fall asleep? I don't expect it. Yeah, so this is interesting. Last thing, I'm going to go into the questions now, but last thing I'll mention is what happens if you don't do these things, if you don't respect your seniors and deal with your seniors properly. But, you know, you disrespect them and stuff like that. So, the Bhagavatam says, this is somewhere in the 26th chapter of the 5th canto. One who violates etiquette by not showing proper respect to superiors is put into the hell known as Sharakardama. A low-born and abominable person who in this life becomes falsely proud, thinking, I'm great, and who thus fails to show proper respect to one more elevated than he by birth, austerity, education, behavior, caste, or spiritual order, is like a dead man even in this lifetime. And after death he is thrown head first into the hell known as Sharakardama. There he must suffer great tribulation at the hands of the agents of Yamaraj. Well, you know, we mentioned yesterday about Ramachandra Puri and Ishvara Puri, one who didn't respect and one who did. Then there are so many examples, Indra with Brihaspati at least. Brihaspati was the spiritual master of Indra. Indra disrespected him and lost everything. But the demons respected their spiritual master, who was just like a teacher, not really a spiritual master, because they're demons. He's just like a priest, materialistic priest. But they followed his instructions so nicely, they became empowered. This point is made, it's in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam. How the demigods lost their power through disrespecting their spiritual master, and the demons became overwhelmingly powerful through respecting their spiritual master. So, spiritual master, but there's so many superiors. If we deal very nicely with them, if we learn how to deal nicely with them, then it'll make very big differences in so many ways in our lives. But if we are disrespectful, then things can get turned upside down. Okay, we got a few questions here. Let's see if we can answer a few of your questions. One should offer obeisances to sannyasis the first time we see them. Does this include other non-ISKCON Vaishnava sannyasis and Mayavadi sannyasis? Well, actually, Prabhupada said that we should offer our obeisances also even to the impersonless sannyasis on the basis that they have renounced the world and, you know, made such a deep commitment to spiritual life. So generally, the answer to this question is yes. We should offer obeisances to all sannyasis. How should one relate to devotees from organizations other than ISKCON? And furthermore, with devotees who have left ISKCON and are now members of other organizations? Well, basically, we have an etiquette which is called, or it involves, offering respect from a distance. Yeah. You know, other organizations, if we start mixing with them too much, then they're going to introduce other ideas and other practices, and sooner or later ISKCON will cease to be Prabhupada's movement with his flavor. Other flavors will get mixed in. So, therefore, we don't really mix with them, but we're not disrespectful. We don't, you know, just sort of rubbish them or anything like that. We offer respect from a distance. And similarly with devotees who have left ISKCON and joined other, like the Gaudiya Math, to be specific, one of its different varieties, we offer respect from a distance, but we don't get involved. Unless, of course, there's some chance that they may come back and get involved in ISKCON again, then we can give them some time. How does one get past the feelings that we've been chastised and lack the potential to move on? Yeah. So, you know, when you get chastised or something negative happens, then your, you know, sense of humility may become undermined or contaminated by a feeling of, it's like a feeling of material hopelessness, which is not humility. Humility means that I'm very fallen, I actually have no qualification, but my spiritual master and the devotees have so much mercy and Krishna is so merciful that even though I'm so unqualified, that if I connect with them, then by their mercy, wonderful things can happen. In this way, the devotee feels very humble, but very positive and enthusiastic that anything can happen, even with me. But the contaminated form of humility is that, yes, I have no qualifications, I'm very disqualified and useless, and I should give up. So this means your humility has become contaminated. So if you get chastised by, you know, at least by the spiritual master or some genuine authority, then you should take it that this is for my correction, I should learn from this, apply this and improve myself and move forward in a better condition. Now, of course, if you're, you know, some friend or other devotee or just some touchy devotee just gets uptight with you, then that's a different thing. That's a different thing. But if it's coming from some real authority figure, then we should try and take it like that. And if these other, you know, this contaminated type of so-called humility tries to creep in, then we should really try and get it out. You know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, every night we should beat our mind, every morning we should beat our mind 100 times with a stick, and every night we should beat our mind 100 times with a shoe. So this means that when these contaminated ideas get in and trying to really, really get in and take over, then we should give our mind a, you know, a good what happened, straight from unit 2. Hellfire, mother-in-law, chutney. Just tell your mind, look, just wake up. Don't sulk. Is it good for the Mataji to go to a beauty salon to improve her looks, especially her hairstyle? Soon we'll be getting questions, what colour lipstick is better? You know, according to the Vedic standard, and Prabhupada appreciated it, you know, not everything Vedic Prabhupada took to be applicable or practical, but this he did, is that ladies, generally, they should, their hair should be tied back. Yeah. Not up. You know, it's sideways, frizzed, multicolored. Generally, the hair should be tied back. And by the position of the parting, one can tell what is the status of the woman, married, unmarried, or like that, by the position of the parting. Anyway, this is very traditional Vedic. But generally it's best, try and keep your hair relatively simple, and try and not get into, make it too much of a big thing, you know. It's Maya, isn't it? You may look like, with the greatest of respect, just, you know, Miss or Mrs. Ordinary. But you go to the beauty salon to try and get all painted up and decorated up so that you look like Miss World. So why, you know, to bewilder some poor innocent little boy wandering around there and who may get sucked in by it all. But you know, there's this classic concept in the Western cartoons of the wife. You know, the husband's sitting behind his newspaper and the wife's talking, you know, just kind of nattering. And he just periodically says, but he's behind the newspaper. And she, her hair's in curlers. And you know, sometimes she has a cigarette hanging out of her mouth. In other words, you know, they really gave up trying. So, but we shouldn't get too much into these things. Because, you know, there's no need. Just be yourself. And try and serve Krishna, make that the focal point of your life. Does what you wear really make a difference when it comes to consciousness? Yes, certainly. It makes a big difference. If you dress as a devotee, then it will help you to think as a devotee and identify. Otherwise, if you dress as a non-devotee, then, you know, your propensity to identify with the non-devotees and identify yourself as possibly being one of them is at least encouraged, isn't it? This is why devotees, as much as possible, we should try and wear devotee clothes, because it makes a difference. You know, it may not be a big, big thing in a certain sense, but it's nice. And it does help us. It encourages our consciousness. So, you know, we don't force people at all. In fact, we don't even really make much of an issue of it, do we? In our classes and so on. How many times have you heard it said? But the fact is there that it is nice. And if we can do it, if we're in a position to do it, then we should do it. Sometimes we have to go undercover, like to go to Singapore or some countries, Muslim countries, China. You can't go dressed as like this, they won't let you in. So we have to disguise ourselves. And then they think we're just ordinary people. But you don't have to disguise yourself in front of Krishna. Yeah, you don't need to do that. It's okay. You can just be a devotee. Is it an offense if you're not happy or just plain angry when seeing a devotee? Well, yeah. You know, there's one statement by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that if you're not happy, if you don't feel happy when you see a devotee, then you know, well actually, you know what he says? He says you have a hellish state of mind. Yeah. Now, we may have differences with some devotees. We may not agree on certain points with them. Some of them may have habits which irritate us, or attitudes, or, you know, whatever. May do things which disturb us. Of course, if they do things which are wrong, then we may, this idea of offering respect from a distance may come in. Or if they influence us badly, then to offer respect from a distance may be appropriate. But anyone who's a Vaishnava, we should be happy when we see them and appreciate them. And if we're not, then yes, it's an offense, and we'll become contaminated. When offering obeisances, does a male devotee offer full dandavats when seeing a sannyasi? Well, you can do, or not, but with a spiritual master, it's nice. One devotee was telling me, actually, you know who it was? It was Hari Kesh, who, you know, many of you, I'm sure, are aware, has sort of drifted away. But, you know, back in those days, he was very, very prominent and doing very well. So he was telling me, when he was here in South Africa with Prabhupada, there was one day he was just in and out and in and out and in and out of Prabhupada's room for some reason. Just like repeatedly. And every time he would offer dandavats. Every time. You know, like 50 times. Something like that. So Prabhupada went outside, and someone, this is here in Johannesburg in Yeovil, someone offered obeisances. And Prabhupada said, yes, that's very good. You're offering obeisances to the spiritual master. You're first class. Then he pointed to Hari Kesh and said, but he is Dandavat's class. Means like a very first class. So Dandavat's is nice. Because, I mean, if one is doing it actually with the real feeling. Because it means full surrender. Not holding anything back. When offering obeisances, is it necessary to ensure that the guru sees us doing this? If he's talking to someone, is it fine to pay obeisances on his side where he may not see us? Opposed to going in front and maybe disturbing. Like, you know, tapping him on the arm. I'm going to offer my obeisances. No. It's okay. See, this is like the situation in principle when Prabhupada said, you're one day late. Actually, he was very, very pleased by the incredible effort the devotees made. But he was not going to be patronizing. So don't require that the spiritual master has to be patronizing. And if he's not, then I'm just not happy. You know, it's just not good enough. No. Even if he doesn't see your service, but you should know that through Krishna, it's all being noted, and you can be satisfied. Satisfied, happy, confident that it's all going on nicely. If one is in a conversation with a senior devotee regarding a very important subject matter or decision, and if one feels the senior devotee's point is not so ideal, and the senior devotee is strong with his point of view, and we may feel that we have a stronger point, how does one deal with this situation? Well, as we said, you know, the spiritual master is the final authority. So if it's really important, as you say, then, you know, it may be okay to take opinions. But, and you should thank everyone for their opinion. But you should also refer to the spiritual master, but then you should do what he says. His opinion is not just another opinion. So in that sort of case, well, you know, just try to politely excuse yourself and thank the senior devotee. Oh, okay, I think that's it. Oh no, one more. Right, one more. The residents of Vrindavan, where do they fit with regards to etiquette? You mean their own etiquette? Well, that it's not very strong, because their whole orientation in Krishna consciousness is different, spontaneous, and ours is according to rules and regulations. So Lord Chaitanya advised Sanatana Goswami when he went to stay in Vrindavan, don't mix too closely with the local, the Brijbasis, because their standards are different and it may become confusing. Yeah. So, yeah, like they, you know, they don't offer obeisances to anyone. They're kind of wild. A bit wild. Yeah. You know, if you're familiar with Hindi and the difference between aap and tum, in their dialect, Brajbasiya, a dialect of Hindi, they have no aap. There's only tum. Everyone is tum. In other words, you know, there's a shortage of respect. And they're just very sort of, I mean, not all of them, but prone to be pretty loud and like that. So we don't get too involved with them. But we should be very respectful to them, but not get involved. Another case for offering obeisances, offering respect from a bit of a distance. Okay, got it, everyone. Is that all right? Okay, thank you very much for listening very patiently. Let's have a short kirtan to conclude, and that'll be that for this evening. Srila Prabhupada Kirtan.